Okay, so good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for coming in. Nice to see everybody. If I could just begin by reminding you to just turn off your phones, please. Also, a little bit of housekeeping. First of all, a good friend of mine, Rabbi Chaim Goldberg, mentioned to me that his father is well-known Talmid Chacham, Rav Hillel Goldberg. His book, Countdown to Shabbos, is now available at the OU desk, and I thoroughly recommend it if you're interested in buying that book. It's here in the OU. Just in terms of looking forward for the next couple of weeks, the subtitle for this series of Shirim is Am Yisrael at War. And I did tell you last week I wanted to talk about Tu B'Shvat just for 1 week. I hope you don't mind being kind of pulled away from the news just for 1 week. And there is a connection, I see at the beginning. Next week, I'd like to get back into the topic and deal with a very tricky but fascinating halachic analysis of civilian casualties in war and what the halacha has to say about that. That's going to be quite an in-depth and intense analysis. The 2 weeks after that, February the 5th or something like that, and the 12th, I'm not going to be here. There will be a shir, for sure. Rabbi Avi Herzog is going to be here, and therefore I recommend strongly that you come. But I'll be away for 2 weeks, and then I will come back. Be'ezrat Hashem, whatever the date is, the 17th. By the 17th, we're already going to be looking towards Purim. And therefore, I'd like to pick up with the series of Am Yisrael and War and talk about Amalek, because there's a lot to be said about Amalek. Amalek will not feature so much in next week's show, although we'll see a little bit of that. But as we get towards Purim, the Amalek sugis are very relevant. And then once we're at Purim, we're nearly at Pesach, and then you have to start thinking about Pesach. I know that's not what you want to think about right now, but it's still January, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. Okay. A few years ago, when we moved into Alon Shvut, about 8 years ago now, the house was in a bit of a state. The people that lived before there were renting a series of renters. You know what it's like when you rent a property, you never really look after it, it's not yours. And there were a few kind of shrubs and trees and things, but they all looked pretty dead. Pretty dead. So we put a bit of effort into it, and we planted a few more trees, and my sister-in-law, brother-in-law, bought us a grapefruit tree, which we planted around the side, and thought that might be happy there. And then to our extreme surprise, the next year, the tree next to the grapefruit tree suddenly came to life and produced two completely different kinds of fruit. On one side, there were grapefruits, probably excited by its new neighbor, the new grapefruit tree. And on the other side, there were tangerines. And we were a little surprised at this. We wondered if it was a nace, you know, some miraculous sign, like the burning bush or something like that. But we quickly realized that actually that's not the case. That what we had in our garden that we did not know about was called a fruit salad tree. And it is actually its real name, or a fruit bowl tree, they sometimes call it. And I want to talk a little bit about this today. There are a few shilas that come up with it. It's very relevant to Tu B'Shvat, which is coming up to us on Thursday. But it starts off with a topic, with a source, which is very relevant to Am Yisrael at War. And a number of the key issues about this halacha of war will impact on our fruit salad tree. So let's have a look. Let's start with number one. Ki tatzor el ir yamim rabim. When you besiege a town for many, many days, li'lachem aleha, and you're making war again, latafsa, because you intend to capture it. Loi tashchit et etza. Do not cut down the trees, lindoach alav garzen, and force an axe against them, kimimena tochel, because you should be eating tochel, you should be eating from that fruit tree. Va'oton lo tichrot, you may not cut it down. And the next phrase is an interesting phrase that Rashi understands it as a question. We'll go with that for now. Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sade, because is the tree a person? People are at war. The trees are not at war. Why are you taking it out on the trees? Lavo v'fanecha b'matzor, does the tree have to fight for you? It's a fruit tree. Leave it. Eat from it. Appreciate it. Rak eitz asher teida ki lo eitz ma'achal hu. It's only trees where you know that they are definitely not a fruit tree. Ototashchit. That you can cut down. V'charata, and you'll destroy it, you'll cut it down. V'anita matzor, and you'll build your siege apparatus. Al ira asher hu asa imcha milchama, against the city that made war against you. It's interesting, there's a little subtlety there, which is that you're not meant to be the ones making war against other people, but when they make war against you, then you have to respond. It's actually a very subtle but important point. Who was imcha milchama? Adridata, and then you'll capture that city. Because your bracha at the end, you'll capture the city. But don't cut down the fruit trees. Now, it's very interesting here for our purposes today that this introduces a very important difference between fruit-bearing trees and non-fruit-bearing trees. They're identified separately in the pasuk. Now, there is, of course, an entire discussion about bal tashchit, that you're not allowed to waste any resources that you don't need to waste, and that's an entire shiur which I'm not getting into today. I know that everybody's grandmothers always say you can't leave the food on the plate, it's bal tashchit, you have to eat it, you can't waste it. That's just grandmothers want you to eat, actually. That's not really the halacha. If you feel it's going to harm you more by eating it, then you don't have to eat it. But there's a whole shaila about bal tashchit, when you can't cut down trees, when you can't, what you should do with food. What about the simchas that have loads and loads of food left over? Do they have to try and give it to somebody or take it somewhere? What if the cost of transporting it to needy families is actually more than the value of the food itself? There's an enormous discussion to be had, which we're not having at all today. But we're focusing on the angle of, as I say, the fruit salad tree. Now, because a tree, which is a fruit salad tree, has more than one fruit on it. And in fact, I brought you a little opening here from fruitsaladtrees.com. I didn't make that up. It's there. And number two, a fruit salad tree is a tree that grows up to 6 different types of fruit all on the one tree. They are multi-grafted trees with different fruits from the same family. We'll get back to that in a minute. Grafted together on the one tree. All the fruits retain their own characteristic, like flavors, appearance, and ripening times. Although I must tell you, the grapefruits on our fruit salad tree taste a little bit orangey, and the oranges on our fruit salad tree taste a little bit grapefruity. Fruit salad trees can be grown in a pot or in the ground, perfect for your balcony or backyard, and are suitable for all climates. Okay, I don't get any commission. You can go on a video I brought you at the bottom of how you can grow a tree with grapefruit, lemon, mandarin, orange, pomelo, and limes all on the same tree. The only downside is you need to go to New South Wales in Australia to pick it up. I don't think that they deliver to Yerushalayim. I don't think so, but you could check that on the website. Now, I brought you, well, that's a good question. Now, are you allowed? How allowed is this in halacha? Meaning these nice people in Australia are making these trees, but what are the halachic issues? So I brought you some halachic questions at the bottom. Was it permitted to graft it? We didn't graft it. We got there and it was there. But whoever did this, did they ask a shaila? Were they told they were allowed to? We'll get there in a minute. Can we eat the fruit that grows from it? Well, the answer is yes, but we'll see why. Can we make a shechianu on the fruit? That's interesting. If somebody did this ba'aveira, somebody was not meant to do this, can I now say, oh, Baruch Hashem, shechianu, kivanu, v'gianu, can I make birkat ha'ilanot on that tree? Okay. Does it require different trumas and maestros? I'm not going to get that into so much today, into that, but we are going to look at this source properly. So have a look over to page 2. The best place, and this is a good opportunity to bring this to your attention, there is a fantastic website with lots and lots and lots of material in English, as well as in Hebrew, from the Machon HaTorah V'Haaretz, which actually there was one of the Rabbonim there, appropriately named Rabbi Bloom, actually wrote for Torah Tidbits. Maybe he still does. I didn't notice it recently, but he still does. So there's some very fascinating things that he writes in there. And you can find them online. Their English domain name is, I think, a little bit misleading. It's called toraland.org. Now, that's because it's HaTorah V'Haaretz, but they just call it Toraland, which sounds as if it should be in Orlando or something like that. But it's not an amusement park. It is a very, very useful website. And they write here, number 3. The vast majority of fruit trees today are grafted. Most of them are grafted in a halakhically permissible fashion, i.e. similar species, min b'minoi. Meaning there's lots you can do by grafting its own species with itself. We'll see lots of grapes and figs are grafted onto other grapes and figs, and that's absolutely fine. While others are not, and they're different species, min be'eno minoi. And at times, there is not a definite delineation of these categories. Sometimes it's an uncertain species, a Suffolk minoi. What are we going to do? There are various professional rationales involved in grafting. Nurserymen want the tree to produce a specific fruit and select the scion, I think I'm pronouncing that correct, accordingly. The scion is the bit that has the fruit on it. It's the branch. The stock, also called the rootstock, on the other hand, is selected for its compatibility with soil conditions, pest repellent abilities, quality and quantity of its yield, season of its yield, among other factors. And actually, this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years. This is not a new technology. There are all sorts of new technologies we'll talk about at the end, genetic modification and all that stuff. This is very new. This is very old, rather. We've been doing this for thousands of years. What you do is you select, you want to grow fruit X, but fruit X is very sensitive in this climate or to certain pests, etc. So you graft it onto fruit Y, a stock, a root, a sort of a small tree stump of Y, and then you mix all the DNA and you get all the preservative, protective qualities of the rootstock, but you manage to grow the scion with the tree that you want. So this has been going on as long as people have been domesticating trees, which is a very, very long time, and we'll see it's dealt with in the Chumash itself. Have a look, please, with me at number four. Let's start off with some original sources. So God says at the beginning, we want there to be grass, desha. Esev mazriya zera, and it has to be able to produce its own seeds. Okay, and eitz pri oise pri lemino. And lemino was introduced for the pri, but not for the desha. Meaning God says, let there be grasses, and they just have to be able to propagate. But let there be trees which produce their own fruit. Interesting. Why does it say that? As shezaro bo, which their seed is in the fruit, ala aretz, on the land by yichen. The taitse haaretz, and what actually came out of the ground, is deshe esav mazriya zere leminehu. Without being asked to, the grass, as it were, voluntarily said, oh, we'll stick to our own kind. Which we'll see in a minute how that works. Obviously, I'm putting it in a simplistic way. We'll see the halachas we get out of it. The eitz oisepri, and also there were fruit trees, asher zarabol minehu, which produced their seed according to their own species, vayar elokim kitov. And God gives it a bracha, it'll carry on, etc. The Sefer Chinuch picks up on this use of liminehu, limina, etc. And on the halacha of grafting in number 5, he says as follows: Ki Hashem Baruch Hu bara olama b'chachma u'b'tfuna u'b'das. There's Chabad in the fruit trees. Chachma, Bina, and Das. God made this world with an enormous amount of Chachma. U'b'yose yodei Elokim ki kol asher asa hu mechaven b'shleimut le'inyano shehu tzarech b'olama. God gave us exactly what we need in the way that we need it in order to live in the world that we have. And part of that was each species has to be told that it produces its own species. Just look at Bereishis. The light arvu haminim, there mustn't be a mixing of species. Because that will take away from them. If they were meant to be, I don't know, apples grown on walnut trees, then that would have happened at the beginning, says the Sefer Chinuch. The Lo Yitzaveh Aleihem Birkasa, God didn't give a bracha to all these samishta trees that are all mixed together. So we'll see, is that halacha, is that binding, is that a hashkafic point? It is brought here on the mitzvah of not to graft trees, but we'll see to what extent this becomes an actual halachic consideration. We're really talking about the hashkafa. And how far do you take this? We talked about this a lot when we talked about, you know, cutting edge genetic modifications. Cultured meat. The Israel, just this last week, we had a shir on this recently, right? Israel was the first country in the world to give a haskama, as it were, to permit from a health perspective, meat which is grown from stem cells. And we talked, is it fleishik? Is it kosher? And how does it work, etc.? Do we say, oh, no, if God would have wanted cows to be grown from stem cells, he would have made them. Now, you could argue, well, That's exactly what cows do. They do grow from stem cells. And we're just kind of helping them along the way. At what point do we say, well, this is too much. You're playing God. You're intervening overly in the Bria. And at which point do you say, we'll see a source in this in a minute. No, look, God gave us a brain. God gave us a technology. God gave us the ability to work this out. If we can work it out, why can't we do it? Where are the boundaries? That's actually a very interesting point, which we'll examine. And there's not a clear answer on this. There are different voices in Chazal. Some are pushing more, don't play God, there are boundaries. And some are pushing more, technology is not the forbidden fruit. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. Rav Kook tries to steer us through it, a little bit number six. He says, Ateva humashubach mod. Nature is amazing. And we sometimes don't appreciate this. I think the two things we miss in the modern world a lot, not everybody, that we really lose out from missing, is starry skies, which we so rarely see. And they used to see every night, if you think about it. People used to walk out and look up and see thousands and thousands of stars. And now if you're lucky, you can see the moon. Okay, and also sunrise. How many people watch the sunrise? We tend to get up these days after the sun comes up. We see the sun going down every single day, which is a bit depressing. We never see it going up. So I actually think that if we kind of I don't know how you deal with a star issue. You have to go live in the middle of the Negev or something, or in Arizona. Mitzper Amon. Okay, go live in Mitzper Amon. It's lovely there, actually. I don't know what you do for work. I mean, it's a good place to retire, maybe. But I think we're missing out. Nature is really beautiful. But in the place that it's meant to be. It's a manufacturing, when that comes along, nichneset b'makom ha-teva, and that takes the place of nature. He mekalkelet oto. Manufacturing can destroy nature. Even though God did create the world, la'asot, l'shachlel, l'taken, for us to improve it. And this is a very fundamental idea. Everything in the world was made. There's a famous, it's famous, we'll make it more famous now, discussion between Terence Rufus and Rabbi Akiva, one of the many discussions put into the mouths of these two representatives of the Greek Romans and the Jews. And Terence Rufus says, if God loves Bris Mila so much, why wasn't the baby created already with a Bris Mila? And Rabbi Akiva quite famously responds, everything in the world needs just a human touch to perfect it. And he goes through, this food needs a bit of salt, and this food needs a bit of sugar, and this food needs a bit of this. So a human being needs a little, like, snip, and it's exactly what it's meant to be. So, on the other hand, women, by the way, don't need a Brit Milah, says the Gemara, because they already have, whatever the Brit Milah achieves, they already have that from birth, which is very interesting. So you can think about what that means. I wouldn't go so far, and not with your husband sitting next to you, but we'll think about that. Okay, so you have to perfect things. Mikol makom sarich ha'adam b'zihirut. You have to be very careful. B'zihirut yitzera le'ayen. You have to make sure shirak yishachlel et ha'teva. That when you're doing things, you're only going to make it better. Shehi matanai, because that's your gift. Aval kishmahares el ha'makom she'ha'teva tzarich la'asot et shelo. When you mess up, when you destroy what nature's doing, umakalkalo, and you undermine it, if you like, you're actually stopping nature from working. As hu gomel nafshon ra'ah, this is very bad for your neshama. Because you're meant to be in a harmony with nature, and you're actually undermining nature. I noticed on the news this morning there was a very rare spotting of a whale. Yes, off the coast of Haifa. A fin whale, so it's the second largest creature in the world, somehow found its way to Haifa. I don't know if that's a good simon or a bad simon. The whales are, we have the support of the whales. You know, we'll take anyone's support that we can get. I can only imagine it was just like, it just took a wrong turn somewhere. Which, if you think about it, in the Mediterranean must be fairly irritating that you were somewhere in the Atlantic and now you end up in Haifa. I mean, you've got to go all the way back to Gibraltar to get out again. But I suppose it'll work it out. Okay? So when you destroy nature, that's terrible. Al-kein higbila Torah et yicholet ha-adam b'shinui ha-dvarim ha-tzviim. Therefore, the Torah introduces limits. Va'amra, and it says, and it brings the pasuk, don't graft your trees or crossbreed your animals. Rather, we'll see the pasuk in a minute. Kol zel ha-shrish b'leif ha-adam. And I don't know if there's an intentional pun or irony there. This is to root inside your own mind and heart. Et chiyuv lizaher shelo la'ares et atav. not to destroy nature. I'm not saying we're, politically correct environmentalists, but environmentalism in principle is an important thing. We mustn't destroy the world. Where you draw that line is, of course, difficult, and that's what we're going to see right now. Two conflicting voices in Chazal. Look at this fascinating description. Number 7, the Tanya. Says the Gemara, where do we draw that line? Because it's not clear. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shnei Nevarim Eilu B'machshava Li Barot B'Erev Shabbos. God intended to create a couple of things on Erev Shabbos. Again, midrashically, we're not really talking about what God intended to do. We're talking about the nature of these things in the world. If you remember, there were certain creations that just slipped in on Erev Shabbos before Shabbos. Certain things didn't even make it to that. The line Nivra'u, but they weren't created at Motzei Shabbos, until after Shabbos. U'b'motzei Shabbos, what happened on Motzei Shabbos? Natan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dei Ba'adam. God helps mankind realize how to do this. Ba'adam HaRishon. Me'ein Dugma Shel Ma'ala. And Adam HaRishon had an insight, like a dugma, an understanding of what's going on above. God didn't create this, but God has helped us and we can. So what did he do? V'heini Shnei Avanim. He took two stones, v'tachnan zo b'zo, and he banged them against each other, v'yatzeh mehem or, and he created fire. This, of course, is why we have a Havdalah candle, based on this idea. We have a Havdalah candle because on Motzei Shabbos, we are making a statement that the world was given to mankind to be creative. We are not just meant to say, well, if God had wanted fire to exist, he would have created fires in our backyards. We have to do that. Which, by the way, Rabbi Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, often used to talk about the contrast between this midrash and the Greek myth of Prometheus. In the Greek myth of Prometheus, Prometheus steals fire from the gods. He has to steal it from heaven, which sets up this contrast and conflict between science and religion. He talks about this, I think, in the Great Partnership. For the Jewish people, there is no myth of Prometheus. God enables us to create fire. There is no conflict between science and Torah. Torah is from God, our brains are from God, and therefore they shouldn't conflict with each other. So that's the first thing he created. The Hevi Shtei Behemot, and he brings two animals. The Hirkiv Zobazo, and he puts them together. A horse and a donkey, we'll see. But Yatzam Hemperi, and he creates a mule. Now, according to this, is there anything wrong with that? Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like this is the Einfall, these are the ideas that God gave to mankind, to create fire, to cross free animals. It sounds like a very positive thing. On the other hand, we have an unusual Pasukim number 8. Look at the Pasukim number 8. The Eila B'nei Tzivon, this is at the end of Parshas V'Yishlach, but it's going through all of the kings of Edom. There's a little posik in there just hiding away. The Eilu B'nei Tzivon, the following are the sons of Tzivon, the Ayah V'Ana, these were Ayah and Ana. Rashi talks about why there's a Vav there and Ana. Ayah rather. Hu Ana, and this is the very same guy, is Ana. Asher Matza Et HaYemim B'Midbar. He discovered the Yemim in the Midbar. When he was pasturing, I don't know what you do with donkeys, herding the donkeys of his father Tzivon. And Rashi points out that Tzivon is the father of Anna and also the brother of Anna, which sets up a whole incestuous sort of goings on with the family, which is not for now. But what are these Yemim? What's going on? Why does it say in the middle of Sefer Brachos that these two people, Anna and Aya, are the ones who discovered the Yemim? You could blink and you'll miss this pasuk, and it's just, you lost concentration for a second and you missed it. Look at number 9. The Yerushalmi picks this up. Ha'esh v'hakilayim, the same two things that we mentioned in 7. Fire and crossbreeding. Afal pishe lo nivrim misheshes yemei breishis. They weren't created during the 6 days of creation. Aval alubu machshava misheshes yemei breishis. But there was a thought to create them. Ha'kilayim, so how did kilayim come apart? He quotes this pasuk. Mahu yemim. What are these yemim? Chetzi of sus, the chetzi of chamor. It's a mule, a horse, and a donkey. Ma asa sivon va'ana. What did these people do? Zimen chamora. They took a female donkey. The hela aleha sus zachar, and they mated it with a male horse. Vayatze mehem pruda, and they produced a mule. What did God say to this? Now, before we saw, this was part of, God gave the ideas. Here, no. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Lahem. So God says to them,
Atem hebetim la'olam davar shehu mazik. You've messed with nature. You produced a monster. You produced this mule, which was never meant to be. You're doing that. Af ani mevi al oisa ish. I'm going to bring against you davar shehu maziko, a thing which is also dangerous. Masa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what did God do? Zimen chachina, he brought some kind of female snake. The helale chardon, and he brought a male toad to mate with the snake. The yatsim emenu chavarvar, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, and a poisonous lizard came out as the result of that. Very interesting, Yerushalmi. So that doesn't seem to be a very positive spin on the idea of grafting and creating new things. How do you reconcile the two? Why is it okay at the story of Adam and the fire, but it's apparently not okay with the story of Anna and his brother, of I and I. I brought you on page 3 some ideas as to why you might be able to put them together. It could be that it was all about intentions, meaning the idea of Anna and Aya being produced by this very inappropriate, incestuous relationship means that they themselves are the product of a bad mixture, and their intentions are not good. Their intentions are not to improve mankind, but they're there to kind of cross those boundaries. They are people who cross boundaries. Therefore, maybe your intention is all important. What your intentions are when you're trying to work out what these boundaries are, maybe that's what it's talking about. I brought you Rav Dessler in the footnotes. It's quite famous. Tuval Kayin, back in Brachos, it says he was famous for making metal. And that's usually seen negatively in terms of weaponry. Why is he associated with weaponry? So Rav Dessler says it wasn't that he did the wrong thing, because you need sharp metal equipment in the world. It's that he didn't safeguard the technology. He didn't take care that it spread. And he was making, I don't know, farm machinery. But then all of a sudden somebody found out the system and they were making weapons and spears, etc. So there's a lot of very relevant ideas going on for the world that we live in today. Technology, safeguarding technology, etc. However, we now need to go into the world of halakha. Because my fruit salad tree is not going to respond to a midrash. It needs a halakhic psak. And actually, I must tell you, since I first looked into this 5 years ago, I've slightly changed my mind on this. And I might need to ask a shaila about my fruit salad tree, which we'll see in a minute. So let's start from the very beginning, in terms of the halacha. Have a look at number 10. So there is a prohibition in the Torah against kilayim. What is kilayim? Number 10. Et chukotai tishmoru. Guard my laws. Behemtacha lo tarbiya kilayim. Don't crossbreed your animals to make kilayim. Sadacha lo tizra kilayim. Do not sow your field with kilayim, and here's the famous one. Ubeged kilayim shatnas lo yale alecha, and do not put on you, which is actually interesting. It doesn't say wear, doesn't put on you, which maybe even applies to sheets and things like that. Do not put on you any mixture of a beged kilayim shatnas, which we know later in the Chumash to be wool and linen. This is becoming actually more of a problem, not less of a problem, because linen used to be very expensive and they used to use a lot of artificial fibers instead. And there's been a bit of a return to natural fibers, which means that there's linen coming more into our clothing. Most clothing doesn't have linen in it. You know, this shirt doesn't have any linen in it. It's cotton, it doesn't have any wool or any linen. Many clothes are just not a problem at all. But there is an issue. I had the buttons came off my wool overcoat, or some of the buttons did, and somebody in my family offered to sew them on, and they said, oh, I have a special thread for buttons which is extra strong and it's made from linen. And I said, okay, let's give that one a miss. It's not getting to the shaila. Is that really a problem? Is it mixed together? And this is not a shir about shatnas. Truth is, if we have a shir about shatnas, we really need to do a road trip to a shatnas laboratory and actually see the, because, you know, there's a lot that goes on there. But these are kilayim. Number 11, Rav Hirsch. Kilayim, kila or kela, means to hold back, to restrain. Hence, kela, the prison. Rav Hirsch, this is Rav Hirsch's genius. He looks for word connections and says, what is the connection between a kela, prison, and kilayim? Whenever I raise these kind of divrei Torah at my Shabbos table, my son, who is actually knows etymology and grammar much better than me, and is a bit much more academic more than me. He tells me how, oh, that doesn't work because he comes from here, and this one comes from here, and that one comes from there. I said, don't spoil my Dvar Torah, you know? Rav Hirsch says it works, let Rav Hirsch talk about it. Transfer to organic creatures. Keller designates creatures who, in accordance with God's laws of Leminehu, which we saw, hold back. They hold back their powers of reproduction from every creature that is not their species, and they don't mate with them. Now, kilayim means creatures who are so different to each other that nature makes them hold back from each other. But as nevertheless the dual suffix ayim doesn't indicate just two, but always two that belong together, a pair. Raglayim, yadayim. It's not just you have two arms, you have two arms that match each other. So raglayim yadayim are not 2 feet and 2 hands, but a pair of feet or hands belonging together. So we believe that kilayim also means going together. So that you've got this conflicting inner meaning. On the one hand, kilayim means something that's like kept separate, and kilayim means you pair them, you've made them together. And he says that's exactly it. So the word kilayim itself already contains the complete idea of an unnatural pairing. You've taken a kela, which is dafka, meant to be separate, and you've made it into a kilayim, which is a pair of them. They are kilayim, close to one another by nature, and man has made them into kilayim, has brought them together in spite of their naturally not belonging together. Interesting idea. There are 6 types of halachic kilayim. I listed them on the middle of page 3. Wearing shatnas, which we talked about. Crossbreeding 2 animal species. We'll talk about what is a species. Using 2 animal species to haul or work together, which we don't tend to come across these days. But if you like, carriage, racing or whatever, make sure you just have horses and not mix the different animals together. Grafting different tree species. And a subcategory of this prohibition is planting one species on top of or inside another species. 5, planting crop species in a vineyard. By the way, 1 to 4 apply in chutzlaretz. You're not allowed to crossbreed animals in chutzlaretz. You're not allowed to graft trees in chutzlaretz. So they apply across the world. 5 applies more in Israel. There's a Torah prohibition, whereas in chutzlaretz it's drabonon, which is planting crop species in a vineyard. This applies to any non-woody edible plants such as vegetables, beans, grain, poppy seed, etc. This is more common than you might think. We have a grapevine in our back garden, which also, Baruch Hashem, came to life. You see, you have to talk to your trees. And look, King Charles talks to trees. How bad can it be? Okay, I'm not following that line of conversation. I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me. So my trees do listen to me. They just don't answer back. It's when the trees answer back, you have to seek help. Okay? We have a grapevine in the back garden, which Baruch Hashem produces now. Enormous amounts of beautiful grapes, which we make into grape juice, which we freeze. Schmitter had a bonanza. He produced just about 4 times the normal amount. We were giving them to all of the neighbors. It was really remarkable. It's very tempting. We have like a bed underneath it. We could plant some strawberries there. It would be very nice. Also, you prohibit the strawberries. You prohibit the grapes. You just made a big balagan. You can plant daffodils, you can plant flowers, you can plant another tree. You can have a lemon tree right next to the grape tree or an orange tree right next, but you can't plant clay carrion, which are non-woody edible plants, beans, vegetables, etc., underneath the grapevine. And also, 6, planting 2 crop species together or near one another. That only applies in Eretz Yisrael. This is clay zraim. If you're going to plant edible plants on the ground together, you have to make sure they're separated. And there's an entire masechta. Anyone who's ever gone through Mishnayos, and if you go to a shiva house and people are signing up for learning Mishnayos, kilayim is always available. It's always there for you because nobody wants to get into the nanotechnology in the Mishnayos of exactly which are the kilayim. You need a picture book, honestly, and there are very good picture books, and that does the trick. Okay, so there are the 6 types of kilayim. Let's have a look specifically at the issue of the trees. Number 12. You can't crossbreed your animals, you can't crossbreed your plants. Ma behemtecha baharva'a, just like the prohibition on animals is cross-mating them, crossbreeding them, af sadcha baharkava, meaning the posuk doesn't explicitly refer to grafting. It doesn't explicitly say that. But the Gemara learns that that is a Torah prohibition. Just like the animals don't go together, so too you can't mate the trees together. By the way, you can cross-pollinate, that's fine. If you put a couple of trees near each other and the bees just, you know, transfer pollen, nothing wrong with that at all. And in fact, you can get honey, which has flavors of like orange blossom. And there's nothing wrong with that. Let the bees do that. They don't have a problem with that. But if you're going to take a sign and put it into a stock, that you can't do. And just like the prohibition on animal breeding, crossbreeding applies across the world, so too the prohibition on breeding, on grafting trees applies all over the world. And the Rambam passes this way. Number 13, let's look at a little halacha lemaisa. Number 13, kilei ha'ilanot. Crossbreeding trees. That's included in the prohibition of kilei. Ketzak. How does this work? Hamarkit ilan beilan. If you graft a tree into a tree, kagoy shehirkid yichushel tapuach. You take an apple branch, the esrog, and you put it in an esrog. By the way, the word tapuach by the time of the Rambam probably means an apple, like we have an apple. But at the time of Chazal, it doesn't mean an apple. The word tapuach, just like the word apple in English, often was used for lots of different generic kind of fruits. Hence, French, pomme de terre, earth apples, or tapuach adama. They're not apples. So the word tapuach here, but here, he means an apple. Or etrog with tapuach, or you graft an etrog into an apple. Hariz eloke, mina Torah, that's Torah prohibition, you get malchus, b'chol makom. Bein ba'aretz, bein b'chutz la'aretz. V'chein amarkiv yerek be'ilan. So too, if you graft a vegetable into a tree, or ilan b'yerek, or a tree into a vegetable, loke b'chol makom. It's a Torah prohibition. By the way, non-fruit trees are considered in halacha as all one species. All non-fruit trees. So you can't graft a fruit tree with a non-fruit tree, but you can graft any non-fruit tree with any other non-fruit tree, because they're all considered the same species. It's an important point bringing out there. And the Rambam says, number 14, the asa, and here's my fruit salad problem, asa la'adam l'kayim klei zeraim b'sadehu ela okra. And if you're not allowed to graft it, but if somebody else grafted it and you find it in your garden, you have to pull it out. The inkaiman, but if you kept it, ela loike. It's not a Torah prohibition, but it's a rabbinic prohibition. You can't have this stuff in your garden. Somebody made it in a prohibited way. You've got to get rid of it. Are you going to say, isn't there a Torah prohibition to pull trees out? Not in this case. Baal Tashkis doesn't apply when you're doing it for a constructive halakhic reason. Here I have a halakhic problem with this fruit tree in my garden. I have to pull it out. So far it's not looking great for my fruit salad tree. I didn't graft it, but someone else did, and it's in my garden. Number 15. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Asa l'kayim hamurkav kilayim. You're not allowed to keep in your garden anything which is made from kilayim. Aval ha-pri ha-yotze mimenu, and here's the interesting point, the fruit that comes from the tree, mutter, is permitted to anybody. Afilu lezesha avar v'hirkivo, even if you're the one that grafted it, you're the one that went against the Torah and grafted the tree, you shouldn't have done that, you can't keep it, but if it got kept by someone else or whatever it is, you can always eat the fruit. This is why we don't have a major kashrus nightmare every time we go fruit shopping in Chutz La'aretz. If this halacha wasn't the case, we would have a real problem. Because if the fruit of a grafted fruit tree was indeed prohibited, there's almost nothing we could eat. Almost all fruit is the product of grafted trees today. Apples are only crunchy because they've got nut DNA in them. Normal apples, you ever eaten those kind of very mushy apple? No one wants to eat mushy apples. You can cook with them. But you need nuts in your apples. So thank God we don't have to ask these questions when we go to Trader Joe's or whatever we go, or Tesco's, whatever your particular place is. In Israel, of course, shopping for fruit is a major cashless issue, but not because of this. It's because of Trumas and Maestras.
They have imported apples.
I'm sure they do. Yeah, absolutely. Lots of fruit is imported. But Baruch Hashem, we can eat the fruit. The problem is, the Chasm Sofer brings up already in the 1800s, Jews were beginning to buy up fruit orchards all over Europe. Jews were beginning to get into finance a bit more. And one of the things that they were doing is they invested. Jews are good investors. They invested in fruit orchards. Chasam Sofer is brought here. I'm not going to read it inside in 16. He's brought by the Pischei Tshuva. The Chasam Sofer says, I don't understand. All these frum balabatim in my community, many of them have own orchards which have grafted trees. How do they allow that? It's prohibited. You have to uproot them. Even in Chutz La'aretz. I don't understand it. And here you have an interesting methodological issue where the frum community does something which is apparently osur. But good, strong, frum people do it, and clearly they don't have an issue with it. The poskim will almost always find a way to show that it can't really be osur. You can't have something which the entire religious community doesn't have a problem with, which is then you turn around and tell them, you're all doing averus. I mean, there are some rabbis that do that, like almost for a living, and find new problems that everybody thought it was fine, and now it's not fine. But that's not the way of certain poskim. It's not the way here of the Aruch HaShulchan we'll see. And the Chasam Sofer says, well, it could be maybe there's a heter to keep them in Chutz La'aretz. Maybe it's only the Rambam that says that also the Shulchan Aruch passes like the Rambam. Maybe we don't paskin like the Shulchan Aruch, which is very interesting. Because we don't always paskin like the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is 95% of the time becomes the bottom line halachically. But not always. There are areas, there's a tshuva of Rav Vosna. He says, I don't understand the Beis Yaakov school system. So I don't get it. They're teaching their girls chumash. And it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't teach women chumash. Forget about Gemara. They're not teaching in Gemara. They're teaching them chumash. And they're teaching them chumash Meforshim. And they're learning Ramban and Chizkuni. And they're learning Torah Shabalpa. He says, I don't understand it. It's posh. It's against the Shulchan Aruch. He has a tshuva that the whole Beis Yaakov school system is radically non-observant. You had to come here to hear that, right? You never thought that before. And of course, we don't paskin like that. Although the Chofetz Chaim said that the Beis Yaakov system was fine. And you can't turn around and say that the whole Beis Yaakov system has forgotten about the Shulchan Aruch. Clearly, there are poskim that say that we don't paskin like that Shulchan Aruch. By the way, the Hasidim, many of them, they don't teach the girls Chumash. They just teach them like Baal Peh, and Sena Rena, and stories, etc., Parsha. And therefore, you see in this case as well, the Malamid Schos, I brought you in 16 and 17, the Aruch HaShulchan is the almost always Malamid Schos, wherever he can find a reason to justify a minhag, that he says it must be that they're relying on something and they can keep the truth. Of course, they're talking about Chutz La'aretz. Eretz Yisrael is always going to be that much more difficult. So let's keep going and see if we can save my tree. Okay, look at page 5. Here's a turn up for the books. Is grafting trees one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach?
No.
No, that was a very quick answer, and it was the correct answer, except there may be more than Sheva in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Okay? It's like the Ten Commandments. There are definitely more than 10 mitzvahs in the Ten Commandments, which is why the Torah doesn't ever call them the Ten Commandments. It calls them the Aseres Advarim, etc. So the similar, the Sheva Mitzvahs is not so clearly seven. Look at number 18. Tam Rabbanan. Sheva Mitzvahs in Stavah B'nai Noach. Says the Gemara Sanhedrin. 7 mitzvahs are applied to non-Jews. What are they? Dinim, they have to have a court system. Page 5, source 18. Because Hashem, they're not allowed to curse God. Avodah Zorah, idolatry. Giloy Arai, certain sexual prohibitions. Shlichas Damim, they're not allowed to murder. V'gezel, they're not allowed to steal. The Evi Minachai, or eat a limb from a living animal. Which, by the way, was very standard practice. If you're in a country without very much money, and you have a cow, and you can only eat so much meat, so it was pretty standard. They would just chop the leg off the cow. Because why would they waste the whole cow? They don't have enough people to eat all the meat of the cow, and it'll go off. They couldn't freeze it. They couldn't always cure it. So they'd just chop, eat like a leg off at a time, until eventually the cow, they had no choice. The Torah says you can't do that, obviously. Rabbi Chibka Omer, Af al Hasirus, non-Jews are also not allowed, he adds another one, to castrate animals, which is also a very relevant question. If you buy a dog, and you want the dog to be neutered, how do you go about that? It's not enough just to go to a non-Jewish vet. Maybe it's not okay. Rav Shimon adds another one. Afala Kishuf. You're not allowed to be a wizard or a witch. My wife used to work with a witch, a white witch, who claimed to be a Wiccan witch. The awkward part was that she was the head of HR in the firm, which you didn't want to get on her bad side because it would be awkward. So it was a constant source of interesting conversations. I'm not sure she was a machashefa in the halachic sense, and as a personality she was delightful, but she may well have crossed that line. Rabbi Elazar, and here's what's important for us. Rabbi Elazar Omer, afam kilayim. They're not allowed to do kilayim. Mutar b'nei Noach, lilbush kilayim, lizra kilayim, they are allowed to wear shatnas, they're allowed to sow the seeds, the ein oistrim ela b'harvas b'heima b'harkala seyla. But the two things they're not allowed to do are crossbreed the animals, which you see from that whole discussion with Anna and Aya, right? They weren't Jewish, so clearly it was an issue. It's obviously following this opinion, and also putting the stock into the tree. Why the difference? So the Gemara brings in 19 because the command to the trees was always Labinehu. God commanded, if you remember right at the beginning of the year, God included that sivui, you must produce according to your species. Whereas the grasses, he didn't command it, it just happened that way. So you see, says the Gemara from here, that non-Jews are included, Adam and Chava, the original creation, as part of that. And in fact, the Rambam Paskas that way. Number 20. Mipia Kabbalah, shebnei Noach asurim b'harvas behema. According to the received, Kabbalah here doesn't mean mysticism, it means according to the tradition, the oral law, a non-Jew is not allowed to crossbreed an animal, ubahar kavas ilan bilad. And they're not allowed to graft trees. Which actually broadens the shaila. Can I go to a non-Jewish nursery, I mean in terms of tree nursery, and buy trees from them when they weren't allowed to do that as non-Jews? Can you ask a non-Jew to do that? Or is that lifnei iver? The Jew has a prohibition of lifnei iver. I'm not allowed to encourage non-Jews or Jews to do something that they are not allowed to do. So I can give a non-Jew non-kosher food because they don't have to keep kosher, but I can't give them two trees to graft because maybe they're not allowed to graft trees. So this opens up some interesting issues. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Kaganov, I brought you a reference at the bottom to an article he has there. He's quite machmir, and he even says there's a problem for non-Jews to ask non-Jews, which is, you can read his article as to how that works, which becomes more of a shaila when you're looking at it. Okay, fine. So now the $64,000 question. What is the same min? I have a tree in my back garden which has grapefruits and clementinas. You call them clementinas?
Clementinas,
yeah, whatever on the tree. So is that a problem? So look at what the Torah V'Haaretz website says here, source 21. Not all trees are grafted. Generally, fig trees, pomegranate trees, and date palms are not grafted. While it is true that most trees are grafted, among those that are, most are grafted with the same species, and this is permitted. Examples of trees that are grafted in a permissible way include grapevines, olive trees, carob trees, and mango trees. An example of a tree that is almost certainly grafted in a prohibited fashion is the pear tree. 90% of pear trees in Israel today are grafted onto quince rootstocks. Quince is a kind of apple. There are some fruit trees that are sometimes grafted onto forbidden rootstocks, such as plums, peaches, nectarines, apricots. Citrus fruit is grafted onto the same species or onto rootstocks that are sophic minoi. And here we come to an interesting question. Because no one in the time of Chazal had ever seen a citrus tree. Citrus trees are from China, East Asia, and Australasia. I'm not sure exactly when they came into the Jewish orbit, but you can see from the name that we gave the orange that it was not something we'd ever really come across before. Even the English word, orange, is a funny name to give a fruit. I assume that the color came first and the tree came second. I'm not 100% sure about that, which is that they'd never seen this before. They just call it orange. What is an orange in Hebrew? A tapuach zahav. Tapuz is a compound word. It's got a chukchik in it. It's a tapuach zahav. There is no natural Hebrew word for an orange. It's a golden apple. It's a citrus fruit. Aha, you've asked a very good question. If etrusing is citrus fruit and it only came later, how could an esrog be a mitzvah in the Torah? That's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. I mean, I can't guess. Maybe you could say that they had some etrus trees, but they didn't have the others. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ah, some people say worse citrus. Interesting. But tapuach is just from the word lahafiach, which means something that blows up. It could really mean like almost anything. Okay, so you want to say that they did have citrus trees, which would solve your Esrog question as well. And but we still don't see them delineated in the Mishnah. Yes.
The pomelo was grown in ancient Egypt or something.
Really? Okay, so maybe I'm just wrong on this citrus thing from East Asia. That's what I read. Maybe they maybe it's broader than that. Yes.
So when it says a lemon, that's little of a pot, the parshanim, because you don't need a lemon, but the pomelo has this very, very heavy skin.
Yeah, but there's also, don't forget, that is a midrash.
Right.
And therefore the midrash is speaking the language of the midrash. And the people who wrote the midrash may have known about pomelos. That doesn't mean that they were in ancient Egypt.
But the midrash was written in earlier Israel.
Maybe some midrashim are earlier, some midrashim are later. The midrashim always kind of put their own cultural references into the. Someone said it's a little bit like Fiddler on the Roof, Lahavdil. That if you ever read the original story of Fiddler on the Roof, it's nothing like the movie Fiddler on the Roof. The movie Fiddler on the Roof is all about 1950s America. It's nothing to do with 1890s Bialystok. But anyway, that's a different thing. So what is the same myth? So look, let's quickly look. We've got 5 or 6 minutes. Let's look in number 22. Hazei v'hakelev, the Mishnah lists certain things. Wolves and dogs. And dogs. Kelev ha'kofri v'ha'shoel. Wild dogs and foxes. Ha'izim v'atzvayim, goats and deers. Ha'ye'elim v'rechelim, gazelles and lambs. Ha'sus v'aperid, the horse and the mule. Ha'perid v'achamor, the mule and the donkey. Even though they're quite related, because mules come from donkeys. Nevertheless, ha'chamor v'arod, and the donkey and a wild donkey. Afo pishit domim zelazeh, they look like the same family. Kilaim zebazeh. You can't always go by what it looks like. And the Rambam paskens is that there are many fruits that look similar, that you think, oh, they must be related to each other, whereas in fact they're not related to each other, they are different minim. What do we do with the citrus? So I brought you a psak here of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky wrote a big set of svarim, Derech Emunah, which is basically like the Mishnah Berurah, but on those areas of Halacha which are agricultural. He wrote a very detailed commentary, and he brings down here number 24, the limon. The etrog, the eshkolit, the tapuz, yesh lehistapek behem. There is a big question about them. Im hei min echad, mitzad hashvatam, bekam advarim. Are they one min or are they not one min? Meaning apples and plums are two min. Absolutely clear. And the Mishnah lists different things. But oranges and lemons, I'm not going to start with the bells of St. Clemens, but oranges and lemons, are they the same min or are they not the same min? Big suffix. And therefore, what comes out with my fruit salad tree, my citrus fruit salad tree, is that it's a suffix as to whether you're allowed to graft it. Which means that the person who grafted it probably didn't ask a shayla, I don't know who did it, or they ask a non-Jew to do it maybe, which may be okay. I have a question, can I keep it? So it sounds like I can keep it. It's a suffix because the mitzvah of keeping the trees is a drabbanon, suffix drabbanon, the kula. So I don't know if I have to rip it out. So I shouldn't rip it out. And also there's a prohibition against ripping out Torah tree, fruit trees if you're not meant to rip them out. The problem is that the Machon HaTorah V'Haaretz say, well, that's fine if you can't tell, but if you've mamash got like grapefruits on this side and oranges on this side, is there anything more kilayim than that? Okay, so I've kind of got to go back to square one a little bit and see what to do. What about actually making a brocha on them? I brought you a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he says, you know something? Better not to make a shechian on a grafted tree that was grafted incorrectly. Find another fruit, make a brocha on that. Don't make birkat alon on either. You're better off making something else. And then I brought you all sorts of scary modern-day GM nightmares that we're living through. Arctic fish genes which are put into tomatoes to make them more resistant to frost. Corn with jellyfish genes. And again, none of these are technically key line. They're just GM. We have to work out where to draw the line. Tobacco with lettuce genes. Poplar trees with genes that break down pollutants. Bananas with hepatitis genes, which inoculate people who eat the bananas against hepatitis. Interesting, huh? Cabbage with scorpion genes that produce just enough venom to keep off the caterpillars, but won't do you any harm. I can't vouch for that, you know. Rice with human genes, which produce bacteria fighting compounds found in breast milk and saliva, etc. So again, none of these are technically key lime. They're GM modifications, but we have to think about, we said at the beginning, whether we're crossing lines of different kinds, if not halakhically, then hashkafically. And then at the end, I gave you a little bit of a feel on page 7 for the website, the Torah Baharetz website. It's a wonderfully detailed website. You could go down the rabbit hole on grafted trees in English, in Hebrew, and really have a good time. They talk about which are fruits and which are vegetables, and whether you can put one with the other, whether it's a doubt, I'll leave you to read this and to go into the shirim on your own. So, bottom line, can I keep my fruit salad tree? I'm not sure. I was sure when I first gave the shir that I could keep it, but now I'm not sure. The fruit for sure is kosher. The fruit is for sure kosher. The question is, do I need to chop off one side of the tree so it'll only grow one of the million? I'm going to have to work out who to ask. I think if I ask these Torah Baharetz people, they're going to tell me to chop it off. So I have to try and ask somebody that I don't know what they're going to say. That's always the art of Shaila asking. You know, asking someone you don't know what they're going to say. So maybe I will ask Rav Rimon, who is our, and also his name may be a segula, though we'll get a fruitful sack. So let's leave it there. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we get back into the issues of the war, and we will take that further. And 2 weeks from now, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm not here.